My name's Anthony Boughton. I'm a ALM MVP. I have my own company, so I work for Enhance ALM. And I guess one of the things that I do is to help people with application lifecycle management. I help people adopt Microsoft TFS. I help people try and improve their development processes and basically get the most out of ALM to try and get better overall project success. There's some contact details there for me. I also run the Australian ALM conference down the bottom there, so that's coming up for its second year this year in Sydney on the 8th and 9th of November. So I thought I'd wait for TechEd to be over and launch the website and registrations next week. So if you're interested in seeing a lot more of Visual Studio vNext and you've particularly interested in application lifecycle management, then I've got at least 6 international speakers lined up so far. So that should be an interesting event down in Sydney come November. A little bit about what I do. So I have the pleasure and privilege to travel all over the place assisting development teams. Most recently, this was in Alabama. So I was in the deep south USA. I got back 2 weeks ago. So that was quite an interesting experience. So that was the first time I've ever taught inside a Faraday cage. Okay, who remembers high school science? Who remembers what a Faraday cage is? Excellent. You don't tend to work inside these things. It's an interesting experience, especially if you look at, and you can't quite see it, but right down the edge of that door, the little copper contacts to make sure as soon as the door's closed, the electrical field basically goes into place. And even after you get onto the Air Force Base and they search the car and do all those sorts of things, you're inside the area and you still have to walk through these little, you know, cut of things to make sure that you go through one at a time. It was very entertaining too. You arrive and they say, oh, have you got any phones? Yeah, I've got 3. You know, take them out, you can't take them inside. Have you got anything else that transmits? Yeah, I've got this USB dongle and I've got a Telstra USB something or other and I've got this. So they go, the 3 wireless. Oh, I've got a MiFi, there's 4. Have you got any USB sticks? Yeah, 20. oops. So, you know, the locker's filled up. They've closed that and they've gone to the next locker. Anything that takes photos? Yes. Digital still camera, video camera, into the locker. Day 2, oh, then you've got to give them your laptop and you've got to prove that all of the wireless transmissions are turned off. And if you turn it back on again and they find you've done that, I don't know don't want to know what happens, but it's not good. Day 2, I was a lot smarter. I just walked in and pushed my backpack in there and took the computer out. It was a lot more streamlined. But it was good. It was damn hot. And I ordered like just a little Mazda 6, an intermediate car, and they gave me the complimentary upgrade to the 7-seater SUV. Please, can I have a downgrade? And she just stares at you going, what? Yes, I'd like a downgrade, please. But I didn't get it. So I had this massive, ginormous car with a stepladder to get into the driver's seat with satellite radio, which is dangerous. That's just bad. And it just goes to show that there's a lot of rubbish on the airwaves. But it's high tech, so it's coming via satellite. It's got to be better. It was an interesting theory. And it was damn hot and humid. I decided to pop into Dallas because they're on another 40-day heat record thing happening. So, and the best place to go when you want to experience heat and temperature is an airport. We've got that radiant heat from the concrete going everywhere possible. But that's enough of that. So I get the opportunity to do a fair bit of travel and working with a variety of teams. The US Bank are doing a small TFS pilot with 200 developers. So, damn. If they don't like it, they'll just scrap it. So not the average teams always that I work with. But it's always good to be back home again. So the bad news and the slightly less bad news. Up until 3 weeks ago, I was allowed to show you the bits. What happened 3 weeks ago? I was told no bits, which tends to cripple a talk a fair bit. So basically, there's a little conference coming up in a couple of weeks that basically has put down this curtain of darkness over many, many things, including anything to do with Visual Studio vNext. And even my impassioned pleas to say, hey, I'll only show what you showed at TechEd North America. Why does the North American audience get to see some vNext goodness and we miss out? So the powers that be basically said no and cancelled my meeting in Seattle to discuss the fact. I was feeling pretty special about that. So the good news was, Brian Keller came to the party for me. So the reason I asked if you've looked at Brian Keller's blog is what I'm able to, or what I've been allowed to show you, are the things that Brian's got in his blog. He's got 6 videos. He's given me the high-res versions of them. More than happy to share them. So 3 weeks ago, the choice was, do I cancel the session, which is probably the smart thing. Audiences, technical audiences, if you get up there and say, I'm not doing any live demonstrations, that's speaker suicide. Please be kind, just a little bit. The videos that I'll show you, and I'll be clear, I can only show you videos of the bits. But they're the real bits. I had the pleasure of... I'm trying to take anything here. The audiences last week in New Zealand, after every video, there was a round of applause. They really liked what they saw. So, guys, I hope I made the right decision. I'm going to talk around some of the points, talk about the value propositions and so forth. You'll get to see the demonstration, but it'll be in Brian's voice. He was really good. He said, I'll give you the Camtasia recordings and you can take the audio track out, put your own on. And I thought, that's just even more fake. The audience will kill me for doing that. And guys, it was easier just to be open and honest with you and say, I've had to cancel the session. There would be no Dev 11 content here. Adam gave you a bit of a tease in his session in, was it this room?
It wasn't a tease.
Mine are probably a bigger tease. It's all right. I hope I made the right decision there. There'll be some very interesting announcements. There'll be some very interesting bits probably available after the conference. So if out of this session you can take away a bit of interest, a bit of knowledge of where they're taking the product, and then you can be paying a bit more attention in a couple of weeks, and I think you'll like very much what you see. So, guys, I hope I made the right decision there for you, and I'm fairly confident you'll like a lot of what you see coming up. As a presenter, I've got to say, it's decidedly unfulfilling to go, here's the demo, play. At the end, the sense of accomplishment and achievement, it's not there. All right, so Microsoft's guiding principles. If you came along to the Dev Plenary on Tuesday, you will have seen me talk about this a little bit already. The idea that they're guiding principles for ALM in this release. Collaboration. Okay, now that's a constant story all the way through all ALM offerings, all ALM tool sets. We want to make sure that our team members can work a lot more easily. Success of a product comes from all of the team members working together, not us developers and them testers over there. We've all got to work together for overall project success. I spoke about actionable feedback. And if you wind the clock back to 2010, we were talking about actionable bugs. So who's had an opportunity to work with Microsoft Test Manager? Okay. So the idea of actionable bugs there, we're running through the steps. A bug occurs. We go and raise that bug and we get things like video. We get the IntelliTrace, the iTrace files. We get the action recordings. We get a whole lot more so that when we assign that bug to the developers, they're able to basically take action straight away. Now, the idea of no repro shouldn't really come up nearly as much. If you can get the iTrace file, use IntelliTrace to step back through the stack trace leading up to the bug, link that back to your code, the idea is you should be able to get to the root cause of that problem a heck of a lot quicker. Actionable feedback extends that further and, in fact, uses largely the MTM interface. Or test runner more specifically. So actionable feedback is when our stakeholders come along and say, well, the font's too big, or the button's wrong, or hey, that's just all wrong completely. We want to capture that information in a way that our testers can then go and validate the changes, in a way that can be then audited what were the changes that were requested. And why not take advantage of things like the video recording, the ability to take screen captures for various parts of your application. So actionable feedback, exploratory testing, these are some of the big stories coming up in the Dev 11 release. Sorry, the Visual Studio vNext. All right. Codenames Die Hard. So, respect your work styles. So the conversation here was around fit for purpose. I'll use testers as another example. Visual Studio Team Edition for software testers. Apart from being a terrible name, it wasn't a particularly good tool set to go to a tester with, particularly where 70% of all testing is done by manual testers. manual testers talk about test configurations. They talk about test plans. They don't talk about Visual Studio. They don't want that IDE. So Microsoft Test Manager was a good example of a tool that is fit for purpose. So they want to extend that concept far more broadly in vNext. And then finally there, transparent agile process. So take that even further than we've got today. And by that, anything that happens in the project, we want to know about it. We don't want places to hide. If there are places to hide in our dev projects, that's where bad things tend to fester and get worse until they are so big the impact on the project is irreparable in some cases. So through all of the screens and things you'll see, there's a lot more visibility into what's going on in the particular project. A lot more real-time decision-making is enabled through it as well. So hopefully you'll like what you see there. This is the virtuous cycle. And again, I probably guess most of you were at that dev plenary kickoff, but if you have a look at that, we want to basically make that whole cycle a lot more seamless. You know, the handoff to the next team, the next group of people that look after the project needs to be a lot easier, a lot smoother. So if you look up here, our requirements come in. Those requirements go into our product backlog. We've got to manage the product backlog, deal with prioritization of it, do all those sorts of things before handing it across to the dev team. Now, at the same time, when our agile developers are working, we want our agile testers jumping in there as well. We want them going through and delivering the required business value. And then we work across to the bottom, and we ship it. We deliver an increment of value to the business. Now, that handover most often is literally over the top of the partition. Good luck with that. You don't want to be the last guy to touch it either. I've learned that from experience. You are the last one to touch it, the problem's yours. So in handing this across to operations, they've got to be able to look after that application. They've got to know, you know, if this behavior occurs, this is the remedial action you should take. And if that fails, we need to go and get this information and make that available to the dev teams. And then once these things are in production, our operations guys are looking after it, we then need to take some of that feedback back to the backlog. Here are some changes. Here's some problems with performance. Here are some bottlenecks. Here are just some new features. And really, that just keeps going round and round. Not too many projects tend to have a very clearly defined start and end date. Well, certainly there's some out there. I'm not naive about that. But more and more, it's a case of, you know, just keep adding value to it, dive off and do something else, come back, do some maintenance, and so on. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that virtuous cycle, and I'll show you some value points all the way around that that vNext is going to offer. So the first story, an actionable incident. Now, an actionable incident, we talk about the no repro bug scenario we had with 2010. The IntelliTrace diagnostic data adapter made the process of finding our bugs a lot easier. So who's used IntelliTrace? Excellent, fantastic, like pulling teeth. Who's got a license of Visual Studio Ultimate? Can you see a problem with that? One of the big value propositions of Ultimate is IntelliTrace. Interesting, although sadly not unexpected. If this is the time it takes to find and fix a bug, what portion of that is find versus fix? Generally, that's sort of the find time, and this is the fix time. That's a generalization, but does it resonate? Or am I making that up completely? Sounds okay. So IntelliTrace is designed around grabbing this portion here and doing that by giving us such rich information that we should be able to get to the root cause of that problem much quicker. And many of you already have that capability, but you prefer to take time. Is that the assumption I should be making there? Wouldn't it be great if we could take that a little bit further? Now, getting those IntelliTrace logs, getting that information in development, in a test region and so on, is all well and good. But what about those niggly little issues that seem to only crop up in prod? I swear the ops guys are making them up because we just can't seem to, get any traction about getting that fixed. So what I want to show you is I want to show you IntelliTrace in production. Sorry, I want Brian to show you IntelliTrace in production.
IntelliTrace is a capability delivered in Visual Studio 2010, which allows developers and testers to capture rich historical debugging information about .NET applications that can be used to help you quickly diagnose and fix issues. With Visual Studio vNext, we're going to be enabling IntelliTrace for production systems as well. So here I have an ASP.NET web application, which may be running in my production data center. You'll notice that if I click certain customer records, I get errors here. Now, I'd really like to understand what's going on behind the scenes that's causing these errors. So I'll take advantage of IntelliTrace in production for that. IntelliTrace in production is delivered as a series of PowerShell commands. So I can use this with either remote PowerShell or just xcopy deploy these commands straight to the machine that I need to collect the information from. What I can do now is start IntelliTrace collection on the ASP.NET application pool that I have this application running on. The last parameter is my IntelliTrace collection plan. This allows me to tell IntelliTrace exactly how much information I want to capture while I'm running my collection. Now that IntelliTrace is enabled for my application pool, I can just restart my web application. You'll notice here that we've started writing a file which captures all the IntelliTrace information for this particular session. Now that my application pool has been restarted, I can now reproduce the issue. And this should have collected an IntelliTrace event for me. So now I have the option of either stopping IntelliTrace collection, or I can just checkpoint the IntelliTrace file and then use that within Visual Studio to see if I have the data that I need. And here's my new file. I can open that up within Visual Studio Ultimate. And here's all the IntelliTrace information. So I can see the individual web requests that I made, how much time they took. If I scroll down, I can see all of the exceptions that were thrown. So we'll just start debugging. And this will now show me all of my IntelliTrace events. So for example, here are some ASP.NET GET events. If I scroll down, you can see exactly which ADO.NET calls I was making. So that's really nice information to have. But the information I'm looking for is actually down here. You can see I have a null reference exception. And what this did is it actually took me straight to the method of code where this exception was thrown. The other nice thing about this is that I can see the exact value of these parameters that exist within this method call. So here you can see that assigned to is actually set equal to null, which probably explains why I'm getting my null reference exception. So I probably want to add some error handling code here so that if assigned to is set equal to null, that we're giving it a value of full name being equal to unassigned or something like that so that we're not actually triggering an exception call. So that's just a really quick basic example of how IntelliTrace in production can be enabled to help you capture rich historical debugging information and really understand the root cause of a problem.
All right, so do you like that? Yeah? So being able to get that on a USB stick, being able to walk into the server room and basically drop that into a server, being able to mount the ISO, being able to say, look, let's get this rich information, for those problems. What do we do today? So if there's a production problem, someone reported there was an issue a couple of hours ago, we have to pick up the phone, we've got to ring the IT ops guys, we've got to tell them that we want the event log file. So can you give me the system, the application log, give me this log, and I want the last couple of hours, and can you send that? So they grab these whopping large EVT files and say, there you go. I mean, how do you deal with this situation today? So IntelliTrace in production should very much assist us in saving a lot of time and effort in terms of getting to the root cause of it. Grabbing the information that you see here, have that marry up directly to your source code using the symbol server support that's built into the team build capability in Visual Studio 2010 today. So who uses 2010 build? And in your build definition, when it says source and symbol server, is there a UNC path there? Anyone? A couple of yeses. The yeses are good. It doesn't take long to put in a UNC path. And what that will do is when the build occurs, it'll grab your symbol files, your PDB files, and it simply copies them to a network location. And it creates a folder, and the folder's named with a GUID, always really easy to read. But with that GUID, these tools are then able to ensure that we can reach the appropriate symbol files that were built at the same time as the executable. You know, we need to get the same symbol files. Now, what's a symbol server? A couple of yeses. What was a symbol server? Did you download Microsoft Symbol Server 2010? You go and install it on an operating system? No one knows? It's a network share. That's all it is. The wonderful symbol server is a network share where you give the devs in the build process some permissions, and then every time the build occurs, it goes and drops the symbol files over there. So the symbol server is just a network share, nothing more magical than that. So going into our build definition and putting the UNC path there is also a trivially easy thing to do. And many, if not most of you, have Ultimate. You have a lot of these debugging tools already. Prototyping the user interface. So again, I apologise for those of you that came to the dev plenary. This is the same talk about the storyboarding assistant. It was also something that Adam showed you in his talk as well. So you've probably seen this one. But it's still, in my opinion, quite a compelling story for the ease of use that we have. You know, there's a variety of different tools and some good tools there today for creating our prototypes. Again, in Adam's session, he went through and discussed or described some of those other tools. And, you ask questions and saw that there's certainly a number of people out there using each of them. But the ease with which we can use something simple like PowerPoint. The demonstration, you'll hear Brian say that he threw it together in about 15 minutes. Knowing that you can go and create your own shape libraries around your own IP, your own designer's capabilities, the drag and drop across there, putting the experiences in, going into the stakeholders, going to management, hitting F5 and saying, is this what you wanted? I'm graphically inept. My gift is getting any two colours and putting them together and making them look bad. I'm the guy that sort of go and wrote a bit of code and thought, hey, this is really fantastic, and the stakeholders are ho-hum. And then some snot-nosed little graphic guy that knows how to use Photoshop spends 5 minutes and they go, wow! Not a great experience. That's my gift, graphic ineptitude. So being able to go in and just use PowerPoint to drag and drop these rich UI components across and being able to sort of show that to the stakeholders in a professional manner, it's quite enabling. So again, let's just have a quick look at that. It's not a long video for those of you that have already seen it. Let's look at the storyboarding.
Our job as software developers is to make sure that we're delivering value by building software which meets business requirements. The challenge, of course, is to make sure that we deeply understand those business requirements so that we build the right software. To help facilitate this, the next version of Visual Studio will include a new storyboard assistant tool that allows you to have a conversation between the development team and the business stakeholders about exactly how to represent the business requirements they're asking for. So consider the following example. I have an email here from the president of our company saying our customers are complaining because they don't know when their cable technicians are going to show up. It's the age-old problem, right? You don't know how to plan the rest of your day because you're not sure when the cable guy is going to arrive. And he's pointing out that we now have GPS coordinates for all of our technicians from their new phone applications. So we might be able to use that in a manner that helps give our customers a better idea of when to expect their cable technician. So I like that idea, and I have an idea of how I might implement that. Let's use the storyboard assistant. Now, we've built this into a tool that you're probably already using today, and that's Microsoft PowerPoint. You'll notice here that I've modeled my existing web application. I've used a number of rich controls here, so you can see, for example, that I have a data grid, and I can come in here and edit all of these fields as I want. Over here on the right, you see a shape library. So we give you a lot of the controls that you're probably already using in your applications today. You'll notice here that we give you different templates. So here's a phone template, so I can model how that works. And you can also model things like user interaction as well. So as I create a new customer and click Create, you can show how that flows to the next page. So it's a really nice tool. I quickly modeled this in about 15 minutes. It's very easy to work with. So let's scroll down to the customer-facing portal. This is where customers see a list of all of their open tickets. And one way that we might implement that requirement that's coming from the business is to just take a map and show exactly where the technician is at any point in time. So here I can show back to the customer and they can see that their technician is just down the street. And now I can show this to the president and have a conversation about whether or not this is what they wanted. And as it turns out, in this case, the president pointed out that we don't really want our customers to know exactly where all of our technicians are at any point in time. Instead, he would rather see something like this. So now maybe we can pull in some back-end data, which includes the GPS, driving directions, traffic information, and then we can give our customers a much better sense of when to expect their technician. So obviously this is a fictitious example, but it illustrates a really important activity that can happen now between the development team and the business stakeholders so that they can quickly iterate on that business requirement and everyone can get on the same page before a single line of code gets written.
All right, and you can certainly understand that if you're waiting for your cable guy to turn up, finding them all down at Starbucks isn't a good thing. I won't talk too much about that. I mean, we saw that video probably on Tuesday. The next one, managing the backlog. Way too many words on that slide. I get sacked from presenter school for that. Managing the backlog is a continuous task. It requires you to be able to easily see the backlog. You need to be able to then reprioritize it quickly and easily. As a continuous task, we need to make this as simple and as straightforward as possible. Prioritization is very important. Business needs change all the time. Managing the backlog and changing priorities in 2010. Again, I remember Adam gave us a good example of this on Wednesday morning, where the 2010 experience of changing the backlog priorities wasn't a great one. Where we'd go in there and we'd run a work item query, we'd open it up in Excel. In Excel, you've got those, you know, a column of numbers, and that one's suddenly more important, so you've got to go and change that number, which pushes it up here, and then you've got to get the other ones and change their numbers to a bigger number. It was not a good experience. There were some third-party tools that took a bit of that pain away, but there's got to be something better. Wouldn't it be nice to have a rich graphical experience that allowed us just to simply drag and drop, reprioritize things, to make this regular and consistent or continual task a heck of a lot easier? So in this particular example, I want to show you some of the capabilities around backlog management in Visual Studio VNext.
The product backlog is a concept that is central to most agile software development methodologies. The product backlog allows you to capture future work, such as implementing requirements or fixing bugs. Being able to easily manage your product backlog means that you'll be able to more effectively respond to new requirements that may come in from the business or reprioritize that work over time. This is the web access portal in Team Foundation Server VNext. I can jump right into my product backlog from here. This shows all of the work that I have yet to complete and need to schedule to some future iteration. I can easily look at my velocity from past iterations and compare that against work that I have committed for the current iteration. So here you can see historical work that I've completed, and this is the amount of work that I think that I can deliver in this current iteration. And this is updated in real time as I manage my backlog and start assigning work to iterations. It's very easy for me to add new work to this product backlog. Now, I'm using the Scrum process template here, but this will work with any process template that you may use with Team Foundation Server vNext. Now that this product backlog item is on my backlog, it's easy to reprioritize this against other work that's on my backlog. I can easily move this work around by taking input from the business to know when it needs to be completed. I can easily add the rest of the metadata that's required here. And now I can assign this work to the iteration in which I want to complete it. In the next video, I'll show you the new tooling in Team Foundation Server vNext for planning and tracking your iterations.
All right, so what do you think about that one? A huge improvement over the rather clunky experience of using Microsoft Excel before. Okay, so, and that UI is looking just a whole lot better too. Wasn't ever really a big fan of Team Web Access. I shouldn't really throw stones. I've already told you about my graphic skill. But this is a lot better than we've had there before. Sprint planning. Sprint planning is a time-consuming task that requires access to a range of information to do it well. We want to look at, you know, what our team members are doing. We want to be able to do this in a very dynamic way. If you're managing a team on a tight, you know, deadline, our sprints are 2 or 3 weeks long. It's not uncommon, you know, as humans, that suddenly someone gets sick, someone's got a doctor's certificate, they're not going to be in for the next 4 days. That's a reasonable chunk of manpower on a small team on just a 2-week sprint. Now, we need to be able to be very dynamic in that way. Someone's sickness is a typical one. Someone's overcommitted. HR's said, look, you've got too much time built up in lieu. You've got to take a couple of days off. There are many things that come up. So how can we deal with trying to maintain a consistent velocity? How can we ensure that we're going to be able to meet our commitments at the end of every iteration? So again, the ability to be able to plan around a dynamic team, things changing and so forth, being able to make those decisions in real time. Are we undercommitting or overcommitting? Both equally bad, in my opinion. So again, there's a really good story around that. So let's go to the second part of that video.
In the last video, you saw how Team Foundation Server vNext can help you manage your product backlog. In this video, I'll show you how you can take advantage of the new sprint capacity planning and execution tools to help you easily manage your sprints and track those over time as well. Once again, I'm taking advantage of the Scrum process template here, but these tools would also work if you're using another process template with Team Foundation Server vNext. In the last video, we added a new product backlog item, and we assigned that to my mid-flight iteration, Sprint 3. Now, typically, you don't want to add new work to an iteration once it's started, but the reality is that that sometimes happens, and our toolset will accommodate that. So the first thing I'll do is take this new product backlog item, which is now a sprint backlog item, and I'll break that down into the individual tasks that my development team is going to have to implement in order to realize and implement this particular backlog item. Now that this work has been broken down and assigned to team members, you can see the immediate impact it has on my team's capacity. You'll notice that both Cameron and Lori have too much work to complete for this particular iteration. So what I might do is identify a lower priority sprint backlog item and just assign this to some future sprint. Now we've updated my capacity in real time, and you can see that everyone on my team has the right amount of work. Another thing you may choose to do is flip over to the Capacity tab to take a look at how much work each individual is going to be working on per day within this iteration. So for example, we may need to give Cameron a day off here. And you'll notice that that's reflected in real time, so I can see the impact that has on Cameron's schedule. So I may need to assign some of Cameron's work over to Brian in order to make sure that Cameron can take his vacation. I can also flip over to my new task boards in Team Foundation Server View Next to actually track all of the tasks that are within the system in real time as individuals log hours against them. So for example, I know that Lori already completed this task, so we can go ahead and collapse this particular sprint backlog item. We're done with that one. We know that Lori is going to be working on this next, and Cameron's going to be working on this one. I can also flip over to an individual perspective of this as well. So here I can see all the work that's currently on Brian's plate, maybe work that he completed yesterday, and this is really nice when you're doing your daily stand-ups. I can also take work that's currently on Cameron's plate and assign that to Brian as well. So you'll notice that this updated in real time, and now Cameron can take his vacation. The other thing to point out is the burndown up here, which is updated in real time as well. So as I move in here, and maybe if I complete some of this existing work, so let's say Lori finishes this one and Cameron earns some hours here, you'll notice that this is actually updated in real time. So that's just a quick demonstration of how Team Foundation Server VNext can help you manage your backlogs, plan your sprints, and actually help you track that work in real time to make sure that you'll be able to deliver everything you've signed up for in this given iteration.
Do you think it was just coincidence that Brian's capacity seems to be a lot greater than his manager's? It's good to see that Brian's got a bit of a sense of humor there. What do you think of the storyboards there? So imagine that you're going and you got your stand-up. There's a touchscreen monitor there. So as we do our stand-up, we can basically update that in real time. Oh, that one's finished, that one's finished. We'll go a little bit further with that. One of the things that, a couple of the sessions you may have seen here at TechEd already this week have involved the Connect. So you stand there, you're doing your stand-up, and you go, oh, that one's finished, and that one's not finished. When this was proposed, I think Adam was even in the room, when this was proposed about standing there using Connect with our storyboards, someone's put up their hand and asked a very valid question. Hang on a minute. Done, not done, done. What's that going to do to the history of the work item? And we're all going, oh, good question. And the guy at the front of the room, if you remember, basically just didn't say anything. It seemed like hours. It was probably 20 seconds. And he just grinned. And he thought, if people are having that much fun in their stand-up, we've won. And I thought, that's a good point. Stand-ups aren't always something that we're always looking forward to. So using these, using technology to have a little bit of fun at the same time, do something very, serious, and keep the cadence, keep those stand-ups happening, and the information being fed back in real time. So, a much more usable interface there. Have I said how unfulfilling it is to watch someone else do your demonstrations? All right, let's not forget the developers. So, out of curiosity, the developers, the people that say, I'm a dev, how many? Yeah, most of the room I would have expected. So what's in VNext specifically for you? So a couple of scenarios there. Developers need to see their work in progress and their to-do items nice and easily. We want to be fed the information, what's going on there. Developers often are interrupted when they're doing that work. I mean, you all can relate to that. There's been plenty of studies around the impact of context switching. Every time the phone rings, every time someone walks by your desk on the way to the coffee and says, how are you going? Fantastic, now I'm stuffed for the next 15 minutes. I may as well surf the web. There's got to be a better way of doing that. In 2010, we've got the idea of shelving our work. Let's create a little shelf set, put the work in progress over here, get down the production version, fix the bug and so forth. But there's more to our context than just necessarily what's sitting in pending changes. Developers want better ways to manage their unit testing and more freedom to choose as well. And this is something I'd like to see as maybe a sign of maturity. Developers don't necessarily always want the version of the tool or the tool that ships in the box. We want to be able to, in many cases, choose a competitor's product, choose an open source alternative. And I'm really glad to see that they've taken that on board and given us a lot more freedom. Developers, who prefers NUnit over MS Test? Wouldn't it be nice if you could just write NUnit code now? not have to worry too much about it, but still have all of the full richness of the data being fed back into the warehouse. And while you can do that today, it's going to be out of the box. So I think that's a big improvement, and certainly something I believe is in the right direction. One of the things that I constantly talk about is technical debt. Who's got technical debt in their code base? And the rest, I'm going to insult you. Did that work for you the other day? The rest of you are liars. Well, you called someone an idiot. Okay, what's worse, idiot or liar? I think we both lost that. Duplication in code is a form of technical debt. The copy-paste programmer, the Google programmer. That's me lately. Get the bit of code, copy-paste, make a little tweet. Tweak. Too much Twitter influence there. Wherever we do that, wherever we make those subtle changes, that's a technical debt. We've got to then go and maintain or make changes in multiple places. Wouldn't it be great if we could go in and find where that duplication is? Not 100% identical code. Maybe it's some little tweaks and changes, because that's normally what happens. Copy, paste, make a little change. So I want to be able to find those things in an automated way and then reduce that technical debt. Okay, this one's a little bit of a longer demonstration. It took me ages to watch. Let Brian show you something for the developers out there. And it's the post-lunch session as well. So at the end of the video, I'm going to ask you that if you like what you see there, because most of you are devs, I want some noise. I want a round of applause for Brian. And I will bask in a little bit of the throwback noise, pretending it was for me. You ready?
Visual Studio has always been focused on developer productivity, and the next release is no exception. In this video, I'll quickly show you just a few of the ways in which Visual Studio VNext can help you unlock additional developer productivity. That is, we want to help you focus on creating higher quality code and in less time. The first is a feature called My Work. My Work shows me at a glance all the work items that are assigned to me from Team Foundation Server, as well as any work that we have in progress. So as software developers, it often takes us some time to get in the zone and be productive. We open some files, we set some breakpoints, we open up some tool windows, and then a lot of the time we then get interrupted. Maybe there's a high priority bug we need to go fix, or maybe it's just time to go to lunch. The cost of actually switching from context to context can be quite high. Visual Studio VNext wants to help you reduce that context switching cost by allowing you to then suspend the work. The first thing we'll do is back up all of the edits we made to Team Foundation Server, and we'll also take state of the environment as well. So any environment windows that I had open, any breakpoints I had set, any files I had open, so that later on when I come back to this work, I can rehydrate this to the exact same spot that I was working on it. So here you can see my files are opening up again, my breakpoints are set. If I had multiple monitors with tool windows open all over the place, we would open those as well and really help you reduce the cost of that context switching. Visual Studio VNext will also benefit from significant improvements to unit testing. The new Unit Test Explorer will show me all of my unit tests across my entire solution, whether those are MS test unit tests or in-unit, X-unit. The unit testing model is now becoming extensible so that you can plug in the unit testing adapter for the unit testing framework of your choice. So here you can see I have some unit tests in here which are actually based on in-unit, and we're taking advantage of in-unit's mocking framework. I can quickly run all these tests, so we're investing in performance, so you can quickly run all tests across your solution. And then you'll notice that for this particular test, it's failing, and I can jump straight to the line of code where it fails in the stack trace. So again, this is just a quick look at how we're improving unit testing capabilities within Visual Studio. Team Foundation Server VNext will also deliver a rich code review experience. So here I'm trying to fix a bug, and I've made some changes to this regular expression. Now, I think it's right, but I'd like to have some other people on my team take a look at this as well. I can just request a review. I can give it a comment. And I can assign it to one or more people. then submit this request. Now when Cameron looks at his work, he'll notice that he has a new code review request. He can decide to accept this request, and then start looking at the changes that I made. This is the new inline diff viewer that ships with Visual Studio VNext. You'll notice that the old line appears in red, and the new line is in yellow. I can also look at this side by side as well. This makes it really nice for me to scroll in sync with the other file and see exactly what part of the file changed. Now I think this looks correct, so I'll go ahead and leave a review level comment to that effect. I can also leave comments in line within the file as well. So maybe I look at this and say this should actually be something like postal code. Now I can send my comments and then finish this code review. Now when Brian looks at his work again, he'll notice a change as represented by the bold code review. When he looks at this, he'll notice that Cameron has completed his review, and then if he scrolls down, he'll notice that there's actually some comments in line as well. And there you can see exactly what comments Cameron left. So at this point, he may decide that Lori's review is no longer necessary and can remove her from this review. Finally, Code Clone is a brand new feature in Visual Studio VNext that comes straight from Microsoft Research. Code Clone allows you to look across your entire solution for blocks of code that may be similar. I can click on Analyze and then analyze this solution for code clones. You'll notice that I found one strong match here. That means that the files are similar, but not necessarily identical. And so here you can see one block of code, and if I can compare it side by side, they're actually identical with the exception of the redirect page. So what a developer on my team probably did was copy and pasted this method from one class to another class and then just change one small aspect about it. So what I would prefer to do is actually refactor this method instead into a separate file. That'll make it easier to maintain moving forward. Another way that you can take advantage of Code Clone is actually by looking at smaller blocks of code as well. So here you can see we're making a change to this customer entity, and then we're saving it. If I find matching code clones in this solution, you'll notice that I can actually match not only on exact matches, but on similar matches as well. So here you can see, if I look at the two differences here, that here I have a service log entry repository that I'm calling insert or update on. And over here, I have a customer repository that I'm calling delete on. So again, this is some pretty advanced technology that comes from Microsoft Research that allows me to look across my entire solution for code blocks that may benefit from refactoring, or if I'm making a bug fix, for example, in one section, where else might I also want to consider making that bug fix? And finally, maybe I'm going to make an update to customer repository, and I just want to see how other people on my team have updated that as well. So there's lots of really great uses for Code Clone. So that's just a quick look at the tip of the iceberg for what's coming in Visual Studio VNext and Team Foundation Server VNext to help you as a developer be more productive and to write higher quality code.
All right, developers, what do you think? All righty. If I was feeling bad before about not being able to do the live demos, having photographic evidence of me watching the videos is just making it feel a whole lot better. So they're doing a good job. And if out of this session, it basically means that you've got an idea of where they're going, I think it's been well worthwhile. Still got a couple of videos to come for you. I know. Remember, these are available on Brian Keller's blog. If you want to share, you know, some of these things, get people a little bit interested in knowing where Microsoft are going with Visual Studio VNext, these, you know, are readily available. if it gives you a little bit of interest to pay attention to media, to see what's going on with, you know, the Build conference, what comes out of that conference and what's available to people, that's really well worthwhile. So in the next section, I want to move into continuous stakeholder feedback. You know, one of the things that we most like about Scrum is the idea that we're getting feedback from our stakeholders frequently and regularly. You know, there's nothing worse than going and building something that you think is great. It's a fit for purpose. You've done excellent. What do you think, stakeholder? And they tell you at the end that, no, that's not what I wanted. Or can you go and change this? After the house is built, saying, well, actually, I want the garage around the side, isn't the best time to hear that sort of feedback or story. So continuous stakeholder feedback is about giving them, again, a great user interface where they can capture feedback about the application. It's your opportunity to say, well, look, here's the next increment. Here's the next version of the software. What do you think? Do we need to make this bigger, make this smaller? Do we need to make a change to the user experience? So the continuous feedback client is, again, leveraging some of the capability of the Microsoft Test Runner to allow us to capture actionable feedback and get to work on it. So down the bottom, we're moving our way across into actionable feedback. So this is typically done just before we ship, before we release that increment of software. And then what I want to show you is moving across to integration with operations, how we can continue this seamless story and get rich information from our IT operations guys. Okay? So let's have a look at actionable feedback.
A key component of building great, high-quality software is to make sure that you're constantly getting feedback based on your incremental changes from the eventual end users of your software. It's not enough to just get timely feedback. You also need to get rich, actionable feedback as well so that you really understand your customer's experience while using your software. The feedback client that's part of Visual Studio vNext will help you do just that. It's a lightweight client that your customers can use as they're evaluating your software. When they start the client, we can start capturing video recordings, audio recordings, and also other information about their experience when using the software. So they use the software just as they normally would, and as they go through and evaluate the software, they can leave feedback for you. They can even take screenshots as well. And occasionally, of course, your customers may discover bugs. So as I'm clicking through the application and I discover a bug, we can just decide to create a bug. One of the nice things about the way the feedback client captures bugs is that you can actually scope it based on the last actions I performed. So I know it's actually the last few actions that I was clicking on which generated the bug. So I can just scope that, click on save, and then generate that bug straight from the feedback client. So that's just a really quick look at how easy it is to capture end-user feedback in a way that's not only timely, but it's also actionable and contains all the rich information you need to understand the experience your customers are having while trying out your incremental software builds.
All right, so much more rich information we can choose to ignore. A big improvement there. Okay. So that information gets captured back into TFS. If there's anything worse than showing videos, it's going to be the Q&A session. The Q session. Who said that? Spot on. The Q session. There's going to be a heap of them. The question was basic. Lots of Qs, no As. The question was basically, where's that information saved, and do they need access, you know, to TFS if that's where it's saved? I don't believe that has been publicly announced at this stage. Sorry? I have no idea. Moving right past that, when's this session supposed to finish? I've got to talk right up to like a second before then. Operational support. Once you've deployed to production, the job's generally not over, as much as we would often like to believe that's the case. How do we get information from our operations staff? This was the example, and I've been in those roles many times, where they won't let you near the production servers, where you've got to ring them up and say, well, look, can you give me the log files? No, not that log file. It's stored in a different directory. You know, you've got to be able to relate to that, I'm sure. Very few organizations really like the idea of saying, hey, developers, here's RDP access and local admin to production. I'm curious, though, who gets that? Sorry. Who has RDP access to production servers? Really? Damn. Does that surprise you? That surprises me a lot. I need to talk to your bosses. That's bad news. The back door. Okay, how many bosses know you have that? That's a better question. All right, how do we manage communication? And then conveying status, that's really a big issue as well. It's nice for production to come up and say, look, we're getting these support problems, we're getting these bugs reported. Here's the logs, here's everything you've asked for. 9 times out of 10, that's the end of the conversation. You know, the bug comes up again a week later, the behaviour happens again, and the support guy goes, oh, hang on, we've given that to them. Oh, we won't worry about doing that again. Or someone says, is that fixed yet? The IT operations guys will often not have a clue. We don't like talking to them, and they don't like being interrupted watching movies. So, wouldn't it be nice... I've just offended... We can both offend lots of people. just you and me, Adam. Anyway, wouldn't it be nice if we could work better with our IT ops guys? Wouldn't it be nice if we could get more information from them? This is an interesting story because there's a CTP you can download today. Now, I'll put a caveat there. This is talking about System Center Operations Manager and the integration with TFS. So let's see how we can talk better and communicate better, keep status information up to date between the dev teams and our IT ops guys.
Of course, we all know the work isn't over the moment we deploy our applications into production. The operations team needs to continue to monitor those applications, make sure they're running successfully, and if any problems come up, they have to triage and start to diagnose those issues. They have to make sure that they can get rich information to understand the problem, and if necessary, they may need to loop back in with the application support team. Let's take a look at a couple examples here. Here's an application error that I'm having, and it's actually two different errors on the reports page. If I look at System Center Operations Manager, you can see that System Center is already aware of the problem. If I open up this particular message here, you'll see that the management pack actually tells me a little bit more information about what's going on. Here you can see that it's something to do with a configuration error, and if we look at the alert context, I immediately know what's going on. So this is some sort of configuration error. In fact, our policy is that we don't support this type of authentication. We actually require Windows integrated authentication. So that's the problem. That's pretty easy for me to fix, and that gives me all the information I need. Now, another type of problem is one that may actually require the application support team. If you look at this particular issue, you see there's a null reference exception. If I look at the product knowledge pack on this, it actually tells me I may need the application source code in order to fix this issue. Now, what I'll do is actually just assign this to my application support team. So I can set the resolution state to assign to engineering. What this is doing is it's taking advantage of the Team Foundation Server connector, which integrates with System Center. It's creating a new work item issue over on Team Foundation Server, and it's going to automatically package up all the information about this problem for that development team. So if I now refresh this queue, you'll see that this has been assigned over to the engineering team with a work item ID of 135. If I now open up Visual Studio, and refresh my query, you'll see that I have this work item coming in straight from Team Foundation Server. Now you can see this null reference exception, but what's really interesting is the rich data that's packaged along with this as well. So here I can actually see my entire call stack, and I can drill into exactly the line of code where this exception was thrown. Now I have everything at my fingertips that's required in order to fix this issue. And we've actually closed the gap now between the operations team and the application support team by giving the application support team all the information that the ops team has when they diagnose these issues.
All right, does that sound a little bit better, a little bit easier in terms of that integration? Now again, it relies on System Center Operations Manager for that integration, but you can download that CTP connector today if that's something that looks interesting to you. So to recap, what we've had a look at is actionable incidents, how we can use IntelliTrace in production. You know, grabbing the USB, going and saying, plug that into the production server, since you've all got access anyway. Running a little bit of PowerShell there, collecting some information and taking that back to your desk to get to the bottom of it. Although you can all just load Visual Studio on those prod boxes, it's just as easy. We've had a look at managing the backlog, looking through the storyboarding, looking at reprioritizing with just a simple drag and drop of one or more work items now, quickly and easily. We've had a look at sprint planning, how we can deal with capacity and changes in capacity, how we can see that Brian's a very, very diligent worker and has lots more capacity than his managers, being able to see in real time the impact on our burn down when things are closed from the task boards is a very useful feature. Context switching, my work, unit testing, code clone. Excellent. Okay, that was probably the, of most interest to the developers in the room. And the story doesn't stop there. The story will continue very much in a couple of weeks. Code review, I liked a lot. One of my big frustrations in working with teams is the code review story in any current or previous version of TFS. It doesn't exist. Now, we've got something like Windows Workflow sitting behind Team Build. That's great. But why isn't it sitting behind our work item integration? I want to go and design my workflow using a GUI designer and say, when these things happen, this is the path I want to take. Now, I'm not getting that, but I do very much like what they've done there with code review. Again, to raise the quality bar. That's why we do code review, to become better programmers, to have someone say, hey, that's shit code. I mean, I shouldn't, sorry, presenters that swear, that's terrible. But I'm sure someone's written that feedback before, or someone's got that feedback. Often from that, it gives us the impetus to change career, get into training, sorry, or, basically learn from a better developer, a better team member. So I think that's been a big improvement. The continuous stakeholder feedback. The ease with which they can go and capture those things, feed it back into TFS in a variety of ways, is very, very good. And then, of course, the little end there with integration with SCOM. So who thinks they might pay a little bit more attention in a couple of weeks to some of the information coming out about vNext? Who's, a little bit more interested to see where they're going now? Okay, so that's hopefully that's validated my decision to fall on the sword and just show those videos to you. So a call to action. Move to 20, whatever it's going to be, vNext, is going to be an in-place upgrade, and it's going to be, again, easier than any previous upgrade. So get TFS... Sorry? People can make it hard. You'd be surprised. I'm often cleaning up those messes. Yeah. Get Visual Studio 2010 today. The upgrade story from that point will be a lot easier and nicer. Renew your MS... Oh, that's a sales thing. Get rid of that. Download the System Center CTP, the connector, today if you're using System Center Operations Manager. Keep a very close eye on Jason Zander's blog, Brian Harry's blog, and Cameron Skinner's blog. But, of course, with that Build conference coming up, there will be a lot more information, a lot more things to see and do. I'll also, my penance, or something to make me feel better about watching videos with you, is if you're involved with your local user group community, in the first 2 weeks of October, I'll be looking at going around Brisbane, Melbourne, Adams User Group down in Sydney, Canberra as well. So I'll be doing a Visual Studio vNext presentation at each of those user groups. And I'll really be doing the presentations to make me feel a little bit better. So keep an eye out for those sorts of things. The ALM conference coming up in November, there'll be quite a fair bit of looking forward around vNext. There'll be live demonstrations on that. And who knows, we may even have bits in our hands for everyone, maybe, that turns up. Make sure you fill in your evaluation forms. Please be a little bit kind. The Touch Mouse is actually a pretty cool little prize. So, you know, for those of you that have already won one, have a lot of fun with it. It's certainly very good. Get involved in TechQuest there. I'm sure you've all seen people walking around with the shirts and the photo taking and so on, which is awesome. You will be able to download all of these things. So I won't put the videos up there, but what I'll do is there'll be a placeholder there and a link to Brian's blog. I mean, his videos show the guys back at work. Let them get a little bit of insight into what Microsoft are doing. And I've got to say, it's just scratched the surface. They've done pretty good. I mean, we're all critics. I'm as big a critic as anyone else when there's things that we don't like, areas of friction in the team. But I think they're doing a pretty good job and they're certainly listening to feedback. You know, that ability to have those unit test frameworks of choice now, I think, you know, just that's a little win that's very dear to the hearts of many developers, though. Now, my contact details there. If you want to follow up, I'm more than happy to, you know, ignore your questions via email as well as in person. And I'm sorry. So certainly keep in touch. Thanks for coming along, and I hope those videos haven't been too bad. I will stay and listen to your questions.